That's an event that literally pushed me off the sidelines and made me want to become a counterterrorism officer. We've all worked for somebody that we didn't trust. And so important to be able to intentionally create trust with the people that you're supervising. Most of the people never ask their boss, what's your objective this week? What's your objective this month? We underestimate the impact that a bad boss has on people. If you're well-intentioned and you do genuinely care about your people, your team's going to feel it, and that's going to generate trust.
Welcome to another episode of Respond to Resilience. Along with my co-host, Dr. Stacey Raymond, I'm David Dashinger. On this episode, we'll be speaking with He Nguyen. He's a former Royal Canadian Mounted Police officer, leadership coach, and he's going to be speaking about the importance of teaching leadership techniques to the frontline supervisors to improve team performance, improve mental health, and employee retention rates. We invite you to like and subscribe. Our YouTube channel is Responder Resilience. We're on Facebook, Responder Wellness Inc., and Responder TV, LinkedIn, all the podcast platforms. And please check out our website, respondertv.com, for past episodes and guest information. We'll be right back to speak with He after this.
In this family, more of us die by our own hands than by the hazards of the job.
In this family, up to a quarter of 911 telecommunicators have symptoms of post-traumatic stress.
In this family, our mental health and wellness are in crisis,
while responders are quietly suffering.
In this family, many struggle with job-related stress,
burnout, trauma, sleep disruptions, substance abuse,
and relationship problems.
In this family, we can help the helpers.
With vital information and resources,
resilience strategies,
and success stories of overcoming the obstacles.
In this family, no one is alone.
Welcome to Respond to Resilience with co-hosts retired Lieutenant David Dashinger, Dr. Stacey Raymond, and Bonnie Wimley, LCSW, EMTB.
We'd like to welcome He Nguyen. He's a former Royal Canadian Mounted Police officer with 14 years of service across Canada. He spent time as a patrol officer, a close protection bodyguard to the Prime Minister, and a counterterrorism officer. He's now the director of a large campus security team and a leadership coach. He was the recipient of two leadership awards in 2023, the OAC USA Award of Excellence and the Canadian Security Magazine Community Leadership Award. He, warm welcome to Respond to Resilience.
David, Stacey, thank you so much for having me on. I'm really excited to have this chat with you guys.
It's great to have you. I'd like to start by asking you, just tell us a little bit about how you decided to become a police officer.
Yeah, absolutely. So, in a nutshell, it was all around 9/11. So back in the day, I was a software salesman in Montreal, and the attacks occurred in New York, which is actually not too far from Montreal. And I was completely shocked. And that's an event that literally pushed me off the sidelines and made me want to become a counterterrorism officer. So all I knew about counterterrorism was that it was handled in Canada by the RCMP. And so I decided I was going to join. And fast forward 14 years later, and an amazing career. It was very, very exciting to be a police officer for those 14 years.
And based on your bio, sounds like you did a lot in those 14 years, a lot of different assignments and positions. And I'm always loved the concept of a time machine where we could like go back in time and tell our younger self something. So if you had one of those time machines, what do you know now that you would go back and tell yourself early in your career?
Absolutely. That's such a great question. And I think that, you know, we should be asking ourselves this all the time because it's such a powerful tool to help people that are coming up in our industry. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, if I could, you know, travel the DeLorean back into 2003,
right.
You know, what I would do is I would tell myself to, first of all, to take my ego out of the picture. You know, I was young and eager and really, really wanting to make a difference. And that's a good thing. But I think that ego also gets in the way of making good decisions sometimes and gets in the way of learning and so on. So I think the first advice I would give myself would be, you know, slow down, take a breath, and take your ego out of the equation. I think another really important thing that I guess I would teach myself is how to better listen to people and how to better communicate. We're in such a hurry, especially when we're young, we're in uniform, things are happening really, really fast. You don't have a ton of skill set at listening to people and then actually using like verbal judo and all that jazz, you know, to be smooth in how you interact with people. And so I think that's a skill set that I would teach myself back in those days for sure.
What did you pursue after becoming a police officer?
So after 14 years in the force, I decided to literally experience something completely different because I was at the time I was exhausted from policing and you know, any first responder can I think sympathize with the fact that when we say first responder exhaustion, you know, people that are listening right now understand, like it's a very special kind of burnt out. And I was very burnt out at the time. And so I just wanted to experience something completely different. So I decided to launch a business that was entirely dedicated to helping kids with learning disabilities. So it was something that didn't exist at the time, but that I was inspired through my experience as a police officer. So one of the things that I loved at the police academy was the obstacle course. I had so much fun running this thing and, you know, doing the monkey bars and all of these things. And at the time was when all of these obstacle races were beginning to get really popular, you know, like the Spartan race and all of these things. So I was thinking maybe there's a way to combine obstacle racing and learning, because kids that have ADHD or autism and things like that, they're not well suited for classrooms and they never will be. And I was like, well, what if we could invent a classroom where you're moving, where you're climbing, where you're jumping, where you're crawling, you know? And so what I did is I integrated an interactive learning platform inside an obstacle course. And so we developed this thing. And so the kids would run and jump and crawl. And at various points through this essentially obstacle course, like a police course, they would have to stop and interact with this platform that would ask them school questions like geography and, you know, science or whatever it was. We could upload any kind of content on there. And it ended up, you know, helping thousands and thousands of kids. So I was super proud of that.
You know, we've all experienced it as kids, like how we're so confined in a classroom and I'm confined to a chair and having to sit there and just listen and stay alert and awake. And that's brilliant to involve not only body movement, but also just the obstacle course, the fun and the challenge and the three-dimensional aspect of it. It's great, great stuff.
At the core of every community beats the heart of its first responders, ever present on the front line, making the impossible look routine. Through the relentless pressure and the unseen scars, our frontline warriors silently battle the stress of the job. It's crucial they armor up mentally and emotionally, not just for the community they safeguard, but for the families they return to. Supporting the wellness and mental health of first responders is priority number one. By championing their well-being, we're ensuring they're unstoppable, both in the line of duty and in life. Step up for the titans who protect us, because when they're firing on all cylinders, they're not just first responders, they're game changers. Join us. Visit ResponderTV.com to be the difference.
essentially, after running my business for 4 years and going through this huge transformation of going from a police officer to a business mm-hmm. person, my business actually outgrew me. And so I sold the business and decided to come back into the corporate security world because, you know, law enforcement, investigations, that was always kind of my bag. And so went back into the corporate world. But now I had this whole new skill set because I had so many years in business learning about leadership, going to these seminars, and because now I was responsible for staff and so on. So I went and acquired all of these skills. And then once I arrived in the corporate security world and took the helm of a fairly large team of security professionals at the university, all of my experience from law enforcement and then mm-hmm. business all came together into this one experience that I'm currently living right now. So it's pretty fantastic.
Really cool. I just want to go back and look at the retirement piece, if you want to call it that, although you're not retired. And mm-hmm. I think it's not a fair word for many people who leave one profession. Mm-hmm. So when you were winding up your law enforcement career, did you have a plan or what was your vision of what was going to happen next? And obviously you did do one or two more things at least up to this time. So what was that like? What was your journey like from winding up the profession to where you are today?
It was very, very difficult. Like I can't say that I had a clear plan. You know, I was really burnt out. I was tired. I think the first thing that I started doing was, you know, really thinking about what I wanted my next steps to be. I sought help. So I was consulting, you know, I was speaking with people to help me, you know, get my mind back right. And get my body back in shape and so on and so forth. And you know, I think what really helped me through that period was really driving forward. You know, the expression when you're going through hell, keep moving. You know, I guess this is what kept me really pushing through those hard moments, because when you're leaving being a first responder, it's a real identity shift. It's mm-hmm. I was, you know, being a police officer, that's who you are. It's not what you are. It's literally your whole being. And so leaving the force was a huge shock. Like psychologically, it was very tough. You know, I really had to go through a transformation over time to work through, you know, the exhaustion, but also that, you know, the psychological impact of, you know, not being a police officer anymore.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So it seems like you have a particular ability to put yourself in the shoes of other people, right? In the case of kids with ADHD, and you wanted to find a way that they could learn better, right? And so you incorporated activity into that. And I think that's brilliant. So, you know, you also, you do training. You do trainings of leaders. And yep. So clearly you've taken that skill set and you've put yourself, you know, in the shoes of leaders, you know, what it's like for them, but also in their subordinates. So can you tell us how you developed that part of your profession?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it all comes back to the days that I spent in policing and the days of business where I would notice, I would witness bad leadership all over the place, right? And mm-hmm. and the terrible impact that it has on people. Like we underestimate the impact that a bad boss has on people. And so, you know, a great example was at some point in my career, I'm going to stay vague intentionally here, but at some point in my career, I had an extremely bad supervisor who was not just bad at making decisions and bad at treating the people around them, but who was also intent on sabotaging your career, like taking intentional actions to hurt your career. Oh. And so the impact that this had, not just on me, but on my colleagues at work and the mental stress and anguish that this caused my colleagues, this always stayed with me. And that was early on in my career. But as I progressed through the ranks and as I progressed through my various careers, I see this happening over and over and over again. And I think that today, more than ever, we're very much in an environment where we need to pay close attention to what's happening, because not only are we seeing a complete attrition of the pool of workers, like there's less and less people to do the jobs. And it, for first responders more specifically, there's less and less people wanting to be first responders. Mm-hmm. So the attrition is huge. And there's also this huge generational gap where our, you know, the generation of the boomers, the Xers, et cetera, we're, whether we like it or not, we're on our way out. And it's this whole new generation of workers, of few workers that are coming onto the market. And the impact of bad supervision, bad bosses on these people is tremendous.
Right.
So that's what have kind of inspired me to put together a program and be able to just share my knowledge and share with young leaders that are coming onto the market now that are just blossoming. You know, they've got 3, 4, 5 years of experience, and now they've been either voluntold to be in a position, or, you know, they've applied for promotion or they want a promotion, and now they're in this spot. And they're burning themselves out because nobody's taught them these skills. And one of the things that comes up a lot in conversations with these folks that are, you know, maybe 23, 24 years old, 26 years old, it's a whole generation who spent basically 3 years isolated during COVID. Like all they were doing was texting and Zoom messaging or whatever.
Sure.
So it's people who went from, say, they were age 19 and now they're 21, 22, they're coming into the market, but they literally spent a large part of their formative years stuck in a basement someplace. Mm. And so the impact on their ability to communicate right now is massive. And so that's why, I'm so passionate about this, because I can help people learn how to better communicate, how to better lead, how to have these difficult conversations. Because today, even on my team, the team that I'm working with now, sometimes I have 23-year-olds, 25-year-olds, and they're now in charge of a team. And suddenly they have, let's say, a bad employee, and the bad employee's done something terrible. And they've got no idea how to handle this. They've got no idea how to, okay, how do I break the ice? How do I sit down? They feel the anguish in their chest. They're stressed out. They don't know. And there's very few people in our industry that will actually sit down with them and say, okay, there's actually techniques you can use to do this, and just show them these techniques and go through the motions. Because in our days, decades ago, we would learn this stuff on the job, right? We would look at our supervisors. We'd see our supervisors handle things, and sometimes they'd handle it well. Sometimes they'd handle it badly, badly. But at the end of the day, you'd learn kind of through imitation. But today, there's just so much content out there, so much skills that have been developed that can be taught. You don't have to wait 3 years, 4 years of just kind of learning and stumbling through things. You can just cut through and learn the skills and actually perform and be successful and have a lot of less stress doing it.
Right. And you touched on something else, I think, with that younger generation, is that, you know, they're much more comfortable using technology to communicate, maybe not directly, not being in the same room as somebody. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I know from personal experience with having kids who are in their 20s that they will do anything before they pick up a phone and speak with a human being, right? They'd mm-hmm. rather do it online or text or yes. whatever. So right. how do you create comfort or create a direction for someone who's in that generation to feel comfortable sitting down with another person and having the difficult conversation?
Well, the first thing I show my coaches is how important it is to take a step back, have some distance from the situation mm-hmm. and not be emotional, right? It's mm-hmm. easy for people to get triggered. Something happens and mm-hmm. they just, you know, they're in. It's like, hey, I need to talk to you because, you know, you crashed the car or something. You know, it's okay. You need to take a step back. And one of the big things that I teach is how to use like a third person perspective. Mm-hmm. So take a step back and imagine that, let's say somebody in Italy looks at this, at your incident from Italy, like from far, far away. How would they describe the situation, right? You have, for example, you have a frontline worker who used a vehicle and was involved in a motor vehicle accident. And now there is a, let's say, a civil lawsuit. Mm-hmm. Those are the facts. There's no emotions in there. Right. There's no, you were stupid. You drove like an idiot. Like none of that, right? It's mm-hmm. just third person perspective. So by looking at this, and you can reuse that language. So just reuse these words and say, you could sit down with your employee. I could say, Dave, you know, on such and such a date, you drove vehicle 25 Bravo 6 and you were involved in a motor vehicle accident. This resulted in a lawsuit, blah, blah, blah. I'd like to get your perspective on what happened. Mm. There's no accusation here. It's just about the facts, and right. it takes all the emotion out of the conversation. So that's one technique. There's a whole bunch that you can
use. Right.
That's
right.
kind of the ABCs, right? Is taking some distance, taking the emotion out of it, and just using a third person perspective, and letting the other person fill in the blanks and have them not feel attacked.
And that's our first responder community, man. We do amazing things for other people at the risk of ever doing anything amazing for ourselves.
Knowing that we have additional stressors, that means we have to take on the responsibility of making ourselves more resilient.
And on game day, we must succeed as a team. When one of us succeeds, we all succeed.
Most superhero origin stories, they're all stories of post-traumatic growth. You're like the Hulk that's been exposed to gamma radiation, and now you have this super ability because of that trauma you've experienced.
Before you became a firefighter, paramedic, and EMT, whatever it is, you were a human. You started off as a human. That human's got to be taken care of, and then we can take care of other people.
I think in general, you know, a person who's newly promoted to a supervisor position thinks, okay, all I got to do is go out there, do the calls and supervise my crew on those calls. But in fact, what I found and was told, and it was true for me, it's the hard part is within the agency, within your building, within your shift, within your crew to handle those uncomfortable situations that you're talking about here. So yeah, thank you for shedding light on that.
Yeah, no, you're welcome. And it's what I see most often is, and I've even, like, I can't blame anybody, like, I think it's natural, but when you just start on your journey into mm-hmm. being a frontline leader, what happens mm-hmm. is initially, you know, you're thinking, well, I'm pretty good at my job. Okay. So maybe you're a good firefighter or a good paramedic or, you know, a good cop mm-hmm. And it's all skill-based, right? It's all, I can investigate this. I can do an impaired driver investigation. I can, you know, I can plug a gunshot wound. I can, whatever it is, right? It's all skill set based. And people's perception is that once they get into their first levels of leadership, mm-hmm. all they need to do is be really good at, keep being really good at those skills, and then tell people how to do their jobs.
Mm.
But that's not it. You really go from skill set based. When you're on the front line, it's pretty much all skill set based. Mm-hmm. And then as soon as you get into a supervisor position, it's all emotional intelligence. It's all about understanding how to communicate, how to perceive the other person, understanding how you're being perceived, how you communicate, and all that jazz. And once again, it's not all fluff. All of this I'm talking about, there's techniques. You can actually apply very specific techniques to say, to be able to communicate or to be able to create trust. Mm-hmm. Trust is such a huge thing in our organization, right? Mm. And we've all worked for somebody that we didn't trust. And so important to be able to intentionally create trust with the people that you're supervising.
So how do you recommend going about doing that?
Well, the first steps in creating trust, if we're talking about trust, one of the big things you need to do is you need to show competence, right? Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the skill-based part of it. So you need to be able to demonstrate to your people that you know how you're doing things. And I personally believe that harks back all the way back to like when we were cavemen and cavewomen. You know, you needed to see the leader being able to hunt and gather food or whatever, right? And so to this day, we're still like this. We need to see our leaders be able to do the job. So you need to be able to demonstrate your capabilities and your ability to produce results, right? Most people, when they look at their boss, if their boss either never produces results or always fails, there's a huge trust issue that brews on the team. So you need, as a leader, you need to intentionally produce results to create trust. Another thing is it's about your personality. It's about who you are. If you're well-intentioned and you do genuinely care about your people, your team is going to feel it. You don't even need to say anything. Mm-hmm. Your team's going to feel it, and that's going to generate trust. That's a massive thing where I think a lot, and I see it today. I still see it today in all sorts of organizations. People try to fake caring. They fake trying to be around their people. No, you need to genuinely care about your people. And when you do, people feel it and it generates trust. But one of the biggest hacks that I discovered myself, and that's quite a few years ago, but it's the number one thing that will create trust in like 20 minutes, 30 minutes is physical activity. Have you ever gone to the gym with your boss or played a baseball game or, you know, went bowling, whatever? there's something in our brains that makes us click when we're moving together. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I started doing actually when I took over this team that I'm currently managing was I was taking them out on fun runs, which is a grueling, brutal workout. But we would go out and initially, you know, when I sent the first invite, one person showed up. And everybody else on the team kind of had eyes on this person just going, oh, look at this guy. He's going to go run with the boss. How's that going to turn out? And then we came back from the run and we were laughing and joking together and blah, blah, blah. And then suddenly, so of course, this guy gets back into the bullpen all sweaty and he's like, oh, you know, I just came back from my run. I was puking. It was like, and everybody's laughing, right? And suddenly it's a story. And now the next week, three people show up for the run. Mm-hmm. And so now there's four of us. We're going, we're running, we're having fun, we're chatting, all that jazz. We come back. And now all of a sudden people are like, wow, you know, the boss is pretty cool. Like it's we're having fun, blah, blah, blah. And we're exchanging. We're talking about things as we're running. And then the week after that, there's 8. The week after that, there's 12. And right. so on. At some point, right. it's a whole group. And it's mm-hmm. instant trust that you're sure. creating. And that, to me, is a massive hack that most leaders, I'm going to say 99% of leaders right now, supervisors at whatever level, do not go out and work out with their right. crew. So, and it's a huge thing.
It also redefines the group as a team. Like we're all doing this together. And there's cohesiveness that develops as well. And it all just happens naturally.
Responder Resilience is your place for insightful discussions for emergency services professionals, including law enforcement, EMS, fire service, 911 telecommunicators, animal control, rescue squads, K-9 officers, corrections, trauma-informed therapists, and agency leaders. We bring you leading experts and influencers in emergency services, sharing knowledge and tools to improve the culture of wellness and to inspire excellence in leadership. Tune in live every Wednesday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time for the weekly premiere on YouTube and Facebook. Or stream episodes anytime on ResponderTV.com or on your favorite podcast platform. Stay current with hot topics, informative content, and get valuable insights on how to lead a healthier life both on and off the job by subscribing to us on YouTube and Facebook. Responder Resilience is committed to our family of public safety professionals. Remember to like and subscribe today.
As you were talking, I was thinking about, you know, the supervisor that has to talk to the employee that crashed the car. What about sharing about, well, when I was your age, as a matter of fact, I backed a car into another police vehicle and, you know, sharing and showing humility, not superiority, but it's human. It happened to me. It happened to the deputy chief. You know, these things happen, you know. And we have to follow protocol, deal with it, because now it's a civil lawsuit. But what do you think about that, sharing about one's own mistakes as a leader?
Yeah, I like that. I like the concept of humility. And I use it more in a team setting, right? Okay. So if I'm talking to a whole team, I'll go, you know, I might tell a story of the time that I mistakenly locked my keys out of the car and I had to call for somebody to come and unlock my car or whatever. You know, I'll show humility. I'll show, you know, all of the mistakes. I'll openly talk about the mistakes that mm-hmm. I make. And I still make mistakes. Obviously we all make mistakes and I'm very, very open with my team with, oops, guys, I shouldn't have said this or I shouldn't have done that and blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. So let's just take a step back and we're going to go right instead of left or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. So, however, I'm not a huge fan of using it in a one-on-one. And I'll tell you why. Mm-hmm. It's because it kind of takes the spotlight off of the person you're talking to, right? I want to give my attention to the person that I'm having this conversation with, and I'm dealing with the problem, not the person. And if suddenly I bring in a story about a mistake I did, yes, I'm bringing in humility, but mm-hmm. I'm turning the story. Now it becomes about me, mm-hmm. and I don't want to make it about me, you know. There's an incident. We're having a difficult conversation about a car that got wrecked. So let's troubleshoot what happened with the car that got wrecked, leaving my personal stories out of it, leaving this person out of it. We're just looking at it through a bubble. So that's kind of how I like to approach it. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying it's necessarily the big thing, but that's what feels comfortable to me as a leader.
For you, right. Yeah. So, what do you think contributes to, is there an issue with burnout as a new leader? Is that an issue? And if 100%. So, what?
Yep.
Okay. All right. So what, why?
Well, let me put it to you this way. Is there any worse feeling than starting a new job or being in a job and not knowing what the heck you're doing. Like you're just spinning your wheels and spinning your wheels. And you're the most people's response is, I'm going to work harder. I'm going to work more. I'm going to take this phone call. It's 9 p.m. Not a problem. I'm still taking this phone call. I'm going to respond to this email. I'm going to, and it's, we're all of us, we're burning ourselves out, not knowing what we're doing. And so what I'm seeing, and we've all seen this with frontline people, regardless of what industry they're in, is you see a lot of sleep problems, digestive problems, and let's not talk about marital problems, right? I mean, we're like the front line, we're so subject to mental health issues and all of that jazz. And a lot of it, I'm 100% convinced, a lot of it is because nobody's actually taught us, here's how you handle this. Here's how you handle that. Here's it. Yeah. And it's just, yep. Here's the keys to the car. Go do it. And it's terrible because you keep banging your head against the wall. And I'm not saying that even when you have techniques, it's like all rainbows and unicorns. It's not. Working with people is difficult. Supervising people can be a nightmare. Even if you're the greatest leader in the world, there's very, very hard days. But they don't all need to be hard. If you've got the techniques, if you've got the knowledge, then it's 100 times easier. I don't feel that people need to be stressed out, go through divorces, not see their kids, not sleep, not eat, that type of stuff. Like we can avoid all that simply by learning simple techniques.
I wonder if some of the problems, with marriage and also relationships with children, if you're you're in a leadership role, you get promoted even higher, and now you have so many people that you're responsible for and that you're controlling, if you think about it, and then you come home and to turn off being the boss, it's probably a difficult thing to do because your spouse is your equal and your kids are not your constituents, So I imagine a lot of conflict comes from that.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, I've met all sorts, to be honest. I've met people who are in really, really, really high positions of leadership. And once they're in their home setting, it all turns off. Mm. Like they let their spouse be the bosses. They let their kids do whatever they want because they're done. You know, their leadership fuel tank is at empty. Mm-hmm. And once they're in the cocoon of their home, they're like, yep, no, I'm not the boss here. I'm the boss at work. That's it.
Right.
But yeah, I've also, dealt with people that they live their home life like they live their work life.
Right. And that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. And that's problematic because those people, have a real problem turning it off. Mm-hmm. Like to just relax and enjoy life. And it makes me think of, a conversation I had, a few years ago with someone who said, I can't ever stop or else that means I'm complacent. And I'm like, are you sure that this is, healthy? And this person equated resting,
correct,
as being complacent. It was resting was negative. And so it kind of was a light bulb moment for me where it's also a lot about values. How do you value taking care of yourself, taking care of your kids, taking care of your spouse? There's a lot that's connected to your values and how you want to live them.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. Like resting is not productive, so therefore I can't rest. I have to constantly being, you know, productive.
Yeah. Because if I'm resting, I'm a slouch, right?
Correct. So, yeah. Yep. Yeah. And not understanding that there's work and there's play, and that those two things exist for a reason, and they balance each other.
Yeah. Yep.
Prioritizing self-care, which first responders may not be the best poster children for that.
No, they're not.
I wanted to kind of touch on another piece of all this, which is another interesting dynamic, and that's when someone becomes promoted to a supervisor. Now they've gone from being on the front line and just following protocols and orders, and it's pretty straightforward. Now they're in a position to supervise their group, their crew, but they're also, they have someone above them or multiple people above them as supervisors, administrators. And that introduces a new dynamic of getting support from above. What are your thoughts on getting support from your people above you in the food chain or in the chain of command while you're now trying to supervise the group that's under your administration?
That is such a huge question. And I want to say most people, like 90% of the people I coach, have that challenge, right? Mm-hmm. And it's about understanding how to align with your supervisor. Mm-hmm. Most of the people never ask their boss, what's your objective this week? Mm-hmm. Or what's your objective this month? Are there goals? Do you have goals? And so on and so forth, right? We've got no idea. Most of us never have a clear idea of what our bosses are working on. Our attitude is, I'm going to do the best job I can with my people and my boss is going to be happy. Mm. But how do you get your boss's support? You need to align with their goals. That's how you get their support. And so let's say, for example, your boss is aiming to reduce, I'll say anything here, but, you know, reduce expenses on fuel for vehicles, let's say. Well, if you know this ahead of time, then you can organize your operations, you can plan, you can to minimize fuel expenses, for example. And then when your boss sees that you're aligned with their objectives, it's natural reciprocity, right? If you take care of your boss, your boss will take care of you if you have a good boss. but that's in general, that's how it works, right? It's you need to deeply understand what your boss's objectives are. And so that one of the things I encourage everybody to do is once a week, like on the Monday, if you're working shifts, obviously it's on your first day of your block, go see your boss real quick and say, hey, you know, what's your objectives this week or this block or this month? Write that down and just think about it. And then you can just go back to your boss and say, okay, your objectives are this week. Here's what I'm going to do to help you meet these objectives. We're going to do this, do A, B, C, and D. And so hopefully that's going to have an impact on whatever the KPIs you're trying to attain or whatever that is, right? And so your boss is going to be like, you become the ideal subordinate, right? Hmm. And once you're aligned, if you need, for example, now you need something from your boss, you can position whatever it is you need based on what their objectives are, because now you know what their objectives are. So if the objective is to have, let's say, more arrests in a certain zone, like a decreased number of crime in a certain zone, you can go see your boss and say, hey, I need an extra, whatever, $15,000 because we need to buy this type of gear that's going to help us reduce blah, blah, blah. And so everything's aligned with the objective, but that's one of the things that I really believe you need to be doing is seek that alignment with your superior.
Yeah. Well, love the fact that you're kind of increasing the frequency of checking in and learning what they're up to, because we kind of always know the chief's up there. You know, he's working on a budget, he's working on acquisition of new apparatus, whatever it is. Kind of hear it through the grapevine sometimes. And you only, when I was on the job, we only met like every quarter with the chief and got the lowdown and the download of everything going on. But to increase that frequency where you're much more kind of in tune. Connected with the more daily, more weekly. It's a brilliant strategy.
Mm-hmm. No, thank you. And it's, once you understand this, that means you as a leader should be communicating your own objectives to your crew as often as you can, right? Because then you have this synergy where people know to align with your objectives and but they're also, you know, prompted to come and see you and ask you, you know, or clarify, you know, what do you mean by this objective and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. And so everybody's rowing in the same direction.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, as we move to wrap up our conversation, which flew by, please share with us any projects you're working on and certainly where people can find you out there in social media, internet, any contacts you want to share.
Yeah. So, well, thank you so much, Dave. That's so kind of you. If this conversation spoke to you, if you are a first responder and you're looking to, you know, lower the stress, have a better lifestyle, because you are struggling and you want to learn these techniques, please don't hesitate to reach me. It'll be my pleasure to have a chat with you. You can reach me through my website at www.team-up.ca. So it's www.team-up.ca. You can book a free coaching session there. It'll be my pleasure to just chat with you, give you some tips right there on what your problems are, and we can even roadmap, you know, from where you're at to where you want to be. And you can have a really good idea of how you can get there and hopefully maybe get promoted to the next level, make a little bit more money, have a little bit less stress. So it'll be my pleasure to connect. And stay tuned, because I'm planning towards the end of the year to probably launch my own podcast. So, and I would love to have Dave and Stacy on my podcast as guests. So that's what's going on right now in my world.
Fantastic. Well, lots of good stuff. And I love the evolution of where you've come from to where you are now and where you're going down the future. So it's been absolutely a pleasure to speak with you and have this conversation. Thank you so much for being with us today, He.
Thank you so much, Dave and Stacy.
Thank you, He.
Remember to like and subscribe, YouTube, Responder Resilience, Facebook, Responder Wellness, Inc., and Responder TV, LinkedIn, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all the podcast platforms. And check out our website, respondertv.com, for past episodes and guest information. Till the next time, stay safe, be kind to yourself, take care.